Yeah, so what do you do when life happens? If you don't know already, you'll know by end of this hour. You get catalytic. Hi, my name is Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. You've reached Catalytic Radio on BBS Radio Station Number 1, and you can find us on the web at bbsradio.com/catalytic. All the archive shows are there. I'm so glad you're joining us tonight. Even if you don't know what we're going to be talking about, you're going to get it. You're going to get this. If you have a loved one who's been diagnosed with a dementia, if you have a friend who's been diagnosed with a dementia, if you don't know anybody, you probably will. This is a pretty rapidly growing thing happening in our country. But more than that, we're going to talk about the power of human connection for everybody in life. We're going to talk specifically about how human connection can help us get along with our dementia patients, have to help them get along with us. And we're going to help us, everybody understand that even if they present differently than they used to, they're still people, they're still our loved ones, they still deserve respect and love and compassion. And we're going to talk tonight specifically about how we can make that happen in their lives. My special guest tonight is my friend Carol Larkin. Carol is a certified dementia consultant. I met her years ago. We were both contributing writers on the Alzheimer's Reading Room blog, which I believe is the number one blog for dementia information on the internet and Alzheimer's information. And she's become my friend. She helped me when I was caring for my mother, who died of end-stage dementia. Carol had a mother also who had dementia. So we both come into this broadcast with experience, and we want to share what we've learned to help you. And it's my very special pleasure to bring on Carol Larkin. How are you, sweetie?
Hi, Sherilyn. So pleased. So pleased to be able to talk to you.
You know so much, and I want you to share as much as we can do in the next hour to help people who need to hear this broadcast. So let's start on a basic level. I'm sure we have listeners who don't even know that there is such a thing as more than one dementia, and that Alzheimer's and dementia aren't necessarily the same thing. Could you define the terms at the beginning?
Oh, absolutely. Be happy to. If you think of dementia as an umbrella that it sort of defines a number of different things. Dementia is sort of a set of symptoms, things like memory loss, changes in personality, confusion, upset behaviors. There's a multitude of things, of symptoms that dementia defines. Alzheimer's is only one of over 75 dementias. Alzheimer's is the biggest one. They estimate maybe 60% of all people that have a form of dementia have Alzheimer's, but there are other dementias that are coming into play more and more. They're being discovered. Things like Parkinson's, 60% of people with Parkinson's have a dementia. There is a dementia called Lewy body dementia, and that actually is named after Dr. Lewy, just like Alzheimer's is named after Dr. Alzheimer, because those are the people that discovered it. There's a dementia called frontotemporal dementia, and that dementia is different in that people have more behavioral problems rather than just memory loss. There is dementias that come from alcoholism. There are dementias that actually come from things that are correctable, like over-medication or medication that doesn't go with each other, conflicts in medication. There's dementia that can come from, believe it or not, urinary tract infection. There is dementia that can come from thyroid imbalances. I could go on and on, but needless to say, there's a lot of dementias. It's just Alzheimer's is the most well-known one, and it has probably most of the people that have dementia. It covers probably 60% of them.
So let's talk about how you got interested in the subject. Now that we know what it is, what got you interested, and how did you end up doing the work that you're currently doing as a dementia consultant?
As most things in my life, I sort of fell into it, sort of fluked into it. I actually was doing something in engineering. That's what I was doing before my dementia business. And when engineering went, tech has ups and downs, and when it went south, I decided to do something different with my life, and I enrolled in master's program, and the master's program was a program of applied gerontology, and that's the study of older adults in their everyday life. And I did my internship at, I'm in Dallas, I did my internship at the Dallas Alzheimer's Association, and from there, they taught me so much, I was essentially hooked. And I knew that the amount of help that I could give people through the Alzheimer's Association was limited, so I branched out and essentially built my own business as a dementia consultant, and that means that I directly consult with families tackling their individual issues and problems with their loved one that has a dementia. I do that face-to-face here in Dallas. I do it on phone for people all over the United States. And that's the way I can help people family by family.
And it's what you do is so necessary. If you've never dealt with somebody in your family, a loved one who has dementia, it's very difficult sometimes to keep objectivity about what are the best things that we can do to support them. I know for me, I was an only child. I had no brothers and sisters, and there was very little family left. So when my mom had a head injury that turned into dementia, I had to make a whole bunch of decisions at a time when I was exhausted as a caregiver and off balance. That's when people like Carol Larkin become really useful to know, because they can tell you, okay, here's what you're doing now. Here are your options. You want to make a change in how you're handling it? How do you handle your finances? How do you handle finding the right facility if you decide you want to do that? That's when Carol becomes an invaluable resource. Why don't you give them your website right now? We'll mention that a couple of times through the show.
Okay. My website is the name of my business, and the name of my business is Third Age Services. I'll spell it. THIRD AGESERDICES, thirdageservices.com.
So for those of us who don't know what a third age is, what is a third age?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that, Sherilyn. I learned that term when I was getting my master's degree. There are three ages of man. The first age of man is youth, when you're busy learning and you're on the way, on the slope up. The second age of man is the mature adult, which I like to joke, you think you know everything. And the third age of man is actually the age of wisdom, where you have enough experience that you can mold your learning with your experience. That said, dementia, people who have a form of dementia, especially one of the forms that have a memory loss, are slipping very quickly down the side slope of that mountain and losing their wisdom. And that's the people I'm trying to help, along with their families that are trying to help them maintain as best they can, given the circumstances.
And God bless. It's not an easy situation, but I don't know about you, when you went through this with your mom, I look back on my years caring for my mother, and I have a lot of really beautiful memories. There's a perception that it's all awful. It's not all awful,
right.
Is it?
No. As a matter of fact, there are tremendous moments of joy if the caregiver can allow themselves internally, mentally, to recognize those moments. There's probably, if you're open to it, as many moments of joy as there is moments of pain.
I agree with you. So how do we caregivers learn how to open to seeing the moments of joy when we're tired, we're burned out, and we don't have ourselves centered?
Right. And I think you just mentioned the key word is centered. If you take centering to mean that a person could be sort of solid in themselves and their own feelings and then sort of jump outside their skin, if you will, to begin to feel such a strong empathy and compassion for the person who is suffering the losses, rather than seeing the losses in terms of them, their own internal selves, then that's when you can achieve true joy, when you become what I call selfless. Now, if that was easy to do, we'd all do it immediately. It's very hard to jump outside your skin, you know, and be empathetic to anybody else, much less a person who is suffering memory loss and behavior problems and is a person that you knew as somebody other. It's a massive effort on the caregiver's part to jump outside themselves, but it is so worth it to find those moments of joy by leaving yourself, so to speak, and beginning to communicate with this other person on a level which makes them equal. Once that person with the dementia can become equal to you, or the same as you, or a person as like you, however you want to term it. Once you get to that spot, then the caregiver begins to relax a little. And once they relax a little, then it's like an opening that you allow the joy to seep in.
I'm going to put this in a way, I don't want to make enemies by saying what I'm about to say. You know, we live in a culture that is very self-absorbed, I find. You know, many of us are all concerned with how do I look, how much money am I making, what's my life look like, and all this. And then we find ourselves caring for someone, a loved one, a parent, a spouse, child at times, who has been diagnosed with dementia. And we have to learn how to look at somebody else's needs as being as important, if not more important, than our own needs. How would you suggest that people start to make the shift into developing empathy?
You know, is that a question for the ages? It seems to be a question. Excuse me. Sorry. There we go. That was my husband's son. Sorry. So how do we develop that empathy? I have to say that on the face of it, it is extremely difficult because, you know, our culture is one that is, just like you said, me, 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 self-centered, self-absorbed, so on and so forth. How to rise above that, probably one one way is to study others that have previously done this. And throughout history, there have been plenty of others that have previously done this. Cheryl, you can name them better than I can, but it's people who have had the ability to put their own thoughts, needs, desires, agenda besides, put it aside and solely concentrate on the needs of another.
Yeah.
I'd love to give you the answer, but I think you have more answers than I do.
When we're talking about this, I don't know if there are answers, period. I think there are a lot of great questions, and maybe the great questions lead us individually to finding the answers that work best for us. What do you think?
You know what? You're right. It's very simple. You know, if you are able to look to a way to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, I think you're maybe 50%, maybe 70% ahead of others that can't.
Yeah. Part of me believes, and you know, I may get slammed for this. Part of me believes I wouldn't wish dementia on any family. I wouldn't wish Alzheimer's on any family. It's very difficult to go through this, okay? There are beautiful moments, and there are also not so beautiful moments. And they both play into the whole experience. I think, in a way, this has been a gift to wake us up out of being so self-absorbed.
I couldn't agree more. And I wish, unfortunately, that more people actually woke up. You know, I've been helping families for 10 years now, and trust me, I've seen so many people who couldn't get out of their own skins and ultimately ended up suffering to a much higher extent than the person with the disease.
Yeah.
It's awful. You know, you know from your care of your mother that at a certain point late in the disease that things have to be so simple as to just the real basics in life for the person who has a disease that their cares and worries essentially melt away because life is so basic to them.
You know, in a way, that's kind of a gift. I performed the marriage ceremony several years ago. It was not long after my mother passed away, maybe 3 months. I'm an ordained minister. It was the first wedding, probably the last one I'm going to perform because it was so beautiful, I'd hate to repeat it with something that didn't feel as good. The groom had a father who had Alzheimer's, and he died of Alzheimer's the year before they got married. He had a very difficult relationship with his father when he was growing up. The father was very authoritarian, had to be done his way. There was no leeway at all. And Dave did not know how to get along with his father until the father developed Alzheimer's. At that point, the father lost a lot of his because I'm the father, that's why, and became a human being. He became beautiful and vulnerable. And Dave told me at the wedding reception that one of his greatest joys was being able to get to know his father before he died so they could heal their relationship.
Yeah, he was fortunate. You know, there's no guarantee it goes that way, but if it does, boy, that's fabulous. That's fabulous.
It really is. Have you had experience with that? I forget the name of it. You'll know this. They give people yellow goggles and bumpy gloves and things to put in their shoes to simulate what it feels like to be someone who has dementia. Are you familiar with this?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I used to run it. It's called the Virtual Dementia Tour.
And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually went to Atlanta to study with the person who created it, and I did it here in Dallas. It does literally put the person who, you know, puts all the gear on, it literally puts them in the shoes of the person who is experiencing some of the dementia, because it limits their senses. It limits their ability to see. It limits, it gives pain, believe it or not, through little spiked things that are put in your shoes. It limits the manual dexterity of the person. It causes massive confusion by an overload of senses. And then the person who is undergoing the virtual dementia tour is given very simple tasks to do and a time frame to do them. But because your senses are so overloaded, overstimulated, if you will, you literally cannot perform simple tasks that you would do without even thinking. And people have come out of that experience crying, just absolutely beside themselves, because now they understood what their loved one was dealing with 24/7, 365, massive amount of stimulation that the brain can't handle. So yes, it gives empathy. It can't help but give empathy. It almost forces empathy on you.
Have you had the experience of putting on the goggles and putting on the gloves and the painful things in your shoe and feeling what it's like to have dementia?
Oh, yeah, numerous times. Numerous. Yes.
What was your experience? What did it feel like to know the disease the way you know it and be functioning as if you were a dementia patient?
The very first thing that you experience when you have these overload of stimulation that your brain can't handle, very first thing is fear. You just don't know what's coming next. You don't know what to do. You're confused, and you need a leader. I have seen many people, so confused, so scared, that they actually just sat down and refused to move. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to feel. They didn't know how to think. It was so overwhelming, and they were downright fearful. And that's important to take away, to recognize that your loved one is acting the way they're acting, mostly because of fear, not because they're upset or angry. At the base of everything is fear. So if you can relieve their fear by, one, letting them know that they're safe, two, by letting them know that they're loved, and three, by being the guiding light, then you have learned massive amounts from that experience of the dementia tour.
If someone wants to try this for themselves, how would they find the virtual dementia tour?
There is a website that the people who developed the virtual dementia tour have, and I believe on that website, or at least through a telephone call to them, they can tell you where in the United States the virtual dementia tour is being held. It is held all over the United States. They have people, trainers, that do this all over the United States. It's just a matter of finding out where and when. And the name of that website, amazingly, is not Virtual Dementia Tour. The name of that website is Second Wind Dream, S-E-C-O-N-D, Second Wind, W-I-N-D, Dream, D-R-E-A-M-S, because that's dot, I think it's O-R-G, as a matter of fact. The reason it's a different name is because the Virtual Dementia Tour sometimes is, there's a slight charge for it, and that charge goes into granting wishes for terminally ill dementia patients. That's the Second Wind Dreams part. It's a money raiser for Second Wind Dreams.
And you hear about the Make-A-Wish Foundation for children. What a wonderful thing to do for elderly people. I love this idea. What kind of dreams are realized?
Yes, people doing things that they've always wanted to do but couldn't, maybe because not only did they lapse into dementia, but maybe, you know, their body has begun to fail them as well. Sometimes it's as simple as going on a 2-day cruise. Sometimes it's seeing their grandson on the other side of the country. You know, it's whatever dream that person has had and may continue to have, they try and grant that.
That's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. Thank you for mentioning that, and thank you also for spelling the name of the website. I'm sure this is helping many people who are taking notes and saying, yeah, I got to check this out. So thank you for doing that.
Sure.
Okay. And I appreciate you talking in depth about the Virtual Dementia Tour. I guess the best way to understand what it's like to be somebody with dementia is to try to approximate the experience, and then all of a sudden compassion and empathy can show up.
Almost automatically. Or I have seen in the times that I've put it on, people who actually get angry, the people who are experiencing the tour, they get angry. Because it flies in the face of what they imagined dementia was like. So, you know, when you confront the reality of it, it affronts them in some way. Most people get very empathetic. Most people cry, saying, I never understood, I never knew, this is what my loved one went through. But there's that small minority who are angry about it. People are people, huh?
People, and they're good at it. They're going to keep being people until there's something else. Yeah. I remember one day when I was caring for my mother, and you know that's a mixed bag. Every moment is a different adventure. And she was having a particularly difficult day, and I had this brainstorm that just hit me that day, and I carried it forward, which is fear makes people selfish. So when your dementia patient is acting selfish, there's a good reason for it. They are terrified.
Right. Right. Believe it or not, you're right. There's far more logic behind the dementia than us logical people can see. You know, when you dilute things down to their very basic, you know, love, fear, pain, hunger, you know, all the lowest things on Maslow's scale. That's what you're dealing with. And so if you don't have the ability to express what you're feeling or express how, you know, in pain in particular, but in certain in others, when you don't have that ability, you begin to be, I guess you can call it self-absorbed. your focus is solely on what you're feeling, and it can come from fear of everything else, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad we can talk about this, if we can shed some light on what it feels like to care for a dementia patient and what it feels like, more importantly, to be a dementia patient. So then we know how it is to be them. We can tailor our responses and our actions to make them feel comforted and safe and supported. We're talking to Carol Larkin. Carol Larkin is a certified dementia consultant. Her website is thirdageservices.com, and we're just delighted to have her here. Carol, there's so much I could ask you right now, but the question that's coming up for me is, what is the biggest misconception that people have about Alzheimer's or dementia?
Whoa. That's an hour in and of itself, but
Okay.
Probably the biggest misconception that people have about Alzheimer's or other dementias is that two things. One, that there's a cure for it. There isn't. I mean, the real live dementia, there's no cure for that. The real live dementia. There is cures for, you know, over medication or thyroid or something like that, but that's a very small minority of the dementias are curable. Nevertheless, it's worth checking out. The other biggest things, especially in the beginning, is that the caregiver sees the person with dementia acting out and behaving strangely, making accusations, being paranoid, thinking things are some way and they really in our reality are not that way. And the absolute biggest issue with the caregivers are they think that the person is just being, just being untruthful, being hard to get along with, being stubborn, being all those negative things. And in fact, it's not true. It's really what the person with dementia is thinking. Yeah, it's not logical. Yeah, it's not reasonable. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. But they are actually saying what they really think. Because in truth, and the caregiver doesn't understand this, but they've lost their ability to lie. It's too complicated. They have to tell you what they're really thinking because they can't do anything other. It's just too complicated for them to do. But people don't believe them, at least in the beginning.
When do you find that the caregiver gets that aha moment and really understands that this isn't going to be cured and that they actually have a lot that they can offer to help their loved one feel more safe and more secure? When does that aha moment usually kick in?
Well, I think, you know, it really varies with the amount of exposure the person has to the person with dementia. For example, the children that are across the country that, you know, talk to mom once a week and see her once a year, that's just not enough to get the feel for what it really is. They may never come to the realization. Those that are caring day by day by day get to it one heck of a lot sooner. I would say that, though, even those, it probably progresses to early, mid-stage in the dementias before somebody, the caregiver, really gets it. There's the odd person out who gets it early, and I suspect you are one of them. But for the most part, people don't get diagnosed. They don't even go to the doctor until it's early, mid-stage.
You know, I'm going to share, in case this is somebody else's story, my mother and my aunt both had dementia at the same time. They died 5 months apart, and both of them did not have organic dementias. My mother had a traumatic brain injury that never healed properly and led into the dementia that took her life. My aunt had COPD, and she was on a breathing tube. She didn't like it. She pulled it out. She deprived her brain of oxygen, and all of a sudden she had dementia. So it's not always an organic disease or series of symptoms. It can happen just like that.
Right, so right. As a matter of fact, your mother suffered from, amazingly, that probably CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is what football players and boxers suffer from. Awful.
Yeah, they're talking more and more about that now, too. I remember, you know, I've been reading in the news lately about, I think, Frank Gifford. They said that he had CTE, and he died not too long ago. So it's getting a lot more attention. I also got to meet somebody a few years ago on a train who was a retired NFL player and was on the committee that was studying the effects of chronic head injuries and chronic head banging, what this can cause for later life. We had quite an interesting conversation about this. So that's great that they're getting more attention to this. So if you're listening to this, it's not always an organic disease. It can be caused by other things.
That's right, absolutely. And unfortunately, it can, especially the CTE, can be caused very early in life. You know, junior high kids that are playing football or soccer or basketball, you know, you get enough head bumps or serious concussions, boy, you know, it's it can start really early. That's why a football player like Junior Seau, who was very young, ended up committing suicide just because he was so far gone with CTE, and which is a form of dementia. And he decided to commit suicide to save his family from the pain. Awful.
And that's not an uncommon story. I remember there was a man who lived in my mother's apartment building, and he was in his early 90s. He'd had a good life. He didn't have dementia, but he thought it could happen. And he decided to put a plastic bag over his head and save his children from having to go through what might happen in the future. He didn't even have it, and that's what he did. That's how much our fear is about this, the series of disorders and illnesses. It's quite amazing. So what help can you offer, Carol? What help can you offer to people listening who want to know how they can help their loved one, what they can do to make their loved one feel safe, and how does the Humanitude Program play into what you're going to say?
Well, thank you for mentioning that. First, I want to say that probably the biggest strength that a caregiver can have is education, learning about it. Everything you can learn about it, whether it's online or in books or in support groups or in lectures, I don't care where you go, but keep going. The more you know about it, the better you'll be able to deal. So that's the most important thing, is losing the ignorance, you know, being open to new ideas and understanding as best you can what's going on in a mind that is busy deteriorating. That's probably the biggest thing you can do. There are lots and lots of books out there. Some of the real basic ones are the 36-hour day. That's known as the Bible of dementia, and that's the first go-to, but there are lots and lots of others. If you just type in dementia on your computer on Amazon, you'll probably choke. There's so many books on dementia. The Alzheimer's Association does a good job on their website of education. the Alzheimer's Reading Room that you and I were on. That does a good job of education, too. There's massive amounts of information out there, and probably the most important thing for a person to do is avail themselves of the information. The more you have, the easier it is to understand and to be empathetic and loving and compassionate and all those things that are the backbone of good care. Humanitude is starting out, it's a methodology of care that was developed in Europe, actually 30 years ago, and in the Alzheimer's professional circles that I'm in, it's been said that the United States is about a decade behind Europe in providing good care for their Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And this is this Humanitude, which is now coming to the United States, is that dementia care. It is being promoted first in institutions, meaning nursing homes, hospitals, rehab places, assisted living, memory care, because that's where, aside from the hospital, that's where people who have taken care of their parents until their hair is torn out and there's nothing left, that's where people end up going when they can't stay home anymore. That's the worst of the worst of the worst, if you will. And so this methodology of care is directed towards relieving the pain and fear of the worst of the worst of the worst, so that when families unfortunately have to give up the care of their loved one because of either money or, you know, they're stressed out to their max, then at least they're turning it over, the care, over to somebody who has the technique and the philosophy of compassionate care. And that's where it's starting. Eventually, after it gets going in the communities or institutions, then it'll be carried out to the public at large so that they can do that. But this Humanitude is very, very specific, 150 techniques to use to do simple things like help somebody dress, help somebody bathe, help somebody eat, help somebody with their incontinence, and teaches those caregivers what to do to reduce the resistance of the person who has the caregiving, reduce their aggression, reduce their fear, reduce their all sorts of stuff to make that the person with dementia does to make it difficult to care for them. It'll be a while. Sorry, it'll be a while to get to people's houses.
It's coming.
It's coming. It's coming.
Could you talk a bit about, I did watch that video that you sent me a link to by that lovely man, and it was an 11-minute lecture, and in it there was a very short film about somebody who had a dementia who was being bathed, which is terrifying for many people with a dementia to have the experience of a bath or a shower. And after they applied a lot of the techniques of Humanitude, what happened to the aggressive behaviors?
Gone.
Yeah.
Very passive, very easy to deal with. Probably the biggest thing that Humanitude does is it psychotropic drugs, the drugs that are normally given to sedate them. Those drugs are no longer necessary because they aren't agitated to begin with. I would say that somewhere between 80 and 90% of agitation, aggressiveness, anger, spitting, cursing, fighting, biting, all that, 80 to 90% of that has a direct correlation to what the caregiver is doing when they approach that person with dementia. And that's where the 150 techniques come in and teaches the caregiver how to approach correctly so that the aggression never happens, the agitation never happens. So if it never happens, then of course you don't need drugs to knock it down.
That's the great thing about this. I know with my mom and my aunt, they had very different dementias. I understand that. Am I right about this? Every dementia is like a snowflake. There are no two that are exactly alike. Am I right about that?
Precisely.
Yeah. So the techniques that would work with one wouldn't work with the other. And I thought I knew what I was doing, and I would go visit the other one, and I would have to start from ground zero again. But the thing I learned is the more I just sent love, and the more I just listened powerfully, without having to say much, just listen and let them say what they were going to say, and just sent them love and looked at them directly and had pleasant facial expressions, sometimes touched them if that felt appropriate, sometimes not if that didn't feel it. What a difference just little acts like that can make in how they present.
And that's, believe it or not, that's exactly what is Humanitude does. Humanitude is the recognition of the humanness or the humanity of the person with the dementia, and the tude of the humanitude is the caregiver's attitude. So, whether you knew it or not, you were practicing humanitude in your own way.
I'm glad I was able to come up with something that worked. But like most caregivers, we get thrown into this. We have no education as caregivers. We're living our lives, we're going along, and all of a sudden something happens and we realize, oh, I wasn't expecting this. So we're right in the middle of this, and we have no idea what we're doing. And sometimes we get lucky, and sometimes we don't. So what Carol is talking about tonight, going online, reading about this. And let's take a moment and celebrate our friend Max Wallach for that wonderful book that he's written. Oh. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Max Wallach is one of those very, very, very unique people in life. He is smart beyond all smarts. When you and I met him, he was probably about 13, maybe 14, something like that. And when he started writing for Alzheimer's Reading Room, and he graduated college at 16 and 17. Excuse me, graduated college at 17 and has entered med school. Now, I think he's just turned 18. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he is a first-year med student at Harvard Medical School. He has a passion for Alzheimer's and related dementias. His great-grandmother had Alzheimer's they think it was Alzheimer's. And when he used to go visit her, when she was in the nursing home, he noticed that people who were doing puzzles were much happier, much more engaged. They just were having a better life. So Max, in his beneficence, created a nonprofit, a charity that collected puzzles on the streets, initially on the streets of Boston, where he lived, and then distributed those puzzles to nursing homes, to veterans homes, to assisted living to memory cares so that the people who were in them could be more engaged, more happy, that sort of thing. And his Puzzles to Remember charity, that's the name of the charity, has grown to, I don't know, worldwide now. There's people in other countries that are collecting puzzles and distributing them. That wasn't enough for Max. Max then, while he was in college, wrote a children's book about dementia, and he wrote that for children to help them understand what dementia was and to lessen their fear and just to make it understandable to the grandchildren, essentially, what was wrong with Grandma and Grandpa. And that book, which is called, hang on a second, I got to go grab my copy of it so I can give you the title precisely. Hang on.
Okay. And by the way, Puzzles to Remember's website is puzzlestoremember.org. And if you're shopping on Amazon, they are a 501c3 charity, and you can donate part of what you're spending to support Puzzles to Remember. Max donated 2 puzzles to my mom's memory care unit after she died, and I got to see the puzzles. They're beautiful small puzzles made by Springbox, 6 or 12 pieces, not too much for a dementia patient to have to work with, but enough so they can stimulate memory, which is so important.
Yeah.
Are you back, Carol?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's just a few pieces. Max, the title of this book was Why Did Grandma Put Her Underwear in the Refrigerator? Which is, you know, very funny, and the book had lighthearted pieces to it. But it was written in the words of a 7-year-old, so that kids of you know, almost all ages, even some adults, could understand what was being said there. And it had pictures in it, drawings, actually, that Max and his family did. It was a family affair. And believe me, the way they draw looked like a 7-year-old, so it worked out just fine. And it's been translated, I think it's in 8 languages by now, so it's all around the world. And it's helped very young children have a better understanding of what's going on with Grandma or Grandpa. And that's Max Wallach. He's going to school to be a doctor. He initially said he'd be a geriatric psychiatrist so that he could help patients with Alzheimer's or other dementias. And he's also a researcher. Oh, I almost forgot that part. He's a researcher, and he's written research on Alzheimer's.
And if you buy Max's book, I think half of the proceeds are donated to Alzheimer's research. So not only are you getting an education, you're helping other people perhaps not have to deal with this. You can find the book on Amazon. I've read the book. I wish I would have had it when my mother was diagnosed. It's written for children, but there's a lot of great things in there for adults as well. And Max is you're going to hear things from Max. I expect Nobel Prize at least from this kid. He's just amazing.
He's very special.
We're at the end of our hour, Carol. And I'm so happy you are here. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I've learned a lot, as always, from you, and I trust other people can share the same experience. Could you mention the name of your website one more time before we wrap up?
Sure. The website is thirdageservices.com. And my personal contact is on the website. They can always contact me through my phone number or emailing me, and that's all on the website. Okay?
And she's wonderful.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you. I'm always happy to spend time with you. Please join us in 2 weeks when Dr. Michael Irving is coming back, right in time for the holidays, to talk about how you don't have to be stressed out and in pain during the holiday season. He has wonderful ideas to help you glide through the holidays and enjoy them the way they were supposed to be enjoyed, by using love and by focusing on the things that are important for a healthy heart and love all over the world. This is your host, Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer. Thank you for joining us. Many blessings, as always.